I've been a nasty girl. I'm a nasty girl.
Bombastic. Cheers to episode 26.
Episode 26. We're officially halfway to a year. I watched Shrek this weekend, and that just reminded me of when she's singing to the little bird. And then the bird explodes.
Why did we both just hit that every fucking time?
Dude, I feel like maybe in our next life we could be like podcast but singers.
But like podcast singers? Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen that?
What if all we did was sing through each podcast?
What if we sang the whole pod?
Exactly.
I feel like people would be really fucking fed up with that.
I think we'd be famous.
Have you seen that thing where it's like every time I'm sad I just watch Shrek and then I feel better?
No, but I could see that.
Because like I feel like that's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Like be in a bad mood, watch Shrek and tell me what fucking mood you're in.
A good one.
Be in a bad mood watching Shrek.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Couldn't be done.
Couldn't be me. Can you tell we have nothing to talk about?
When Madison and I changed our topic at the last second, the final hour.
This is the Shrek pod, by the way. Hope for those of you guys who were really excited about some good topics this week.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about Shrek tonight.
Shrek and Fiona.
And Donkey.
Am I Shrek or Fiona? God damn it, I'm Shrek. Whatever, you're Fiona for sure.
Definitely.
Actually, you might be Donkey's annoying ass.
I'm for sure Donkey.
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 What does he say?
Donkey. Get out of my swamp, Donkey.
What is that accent? He's not fucking Irish.
Isn't he? What is he, Scottish?
Far, far away. Where's that?
Scotland.
Oh, yeah, it's in Ireland. You're right.
It's in Scotland. Sorry, we took a couple shots before we started this pod, but we're going to stop with the jibber jabber because otherwise I'm going to have a freaking aneurysm trying to edit this.
You're going to have a time and a half editing the first 5 minutes of this. Yeah, I can already tell. Sure.
So to give you a little bit of a recap on the week we've had, which will then stem into the topic for tonight. Madison.
The topic after that lovely opening is going to be trauma.
And healing from trauma.
Trauma.
How to heal from trauma.
I had a really weird weekend. I had a situation happen that just triggered a lot of old traumatic memories for me. And like I went through, I almost felt like the five stages of grief again. Like this is something that happened years ago, 7 years ago. And I completely thought that I was over it. But it turns out I never dealt with any of it at all, which is so on brand for me to not deal with my trauma.
The suppressed queen.
Suppressive queens. The situation that happened was something that triggered an old relationship that I was in where I was really
severely abused.
Where I was abused. Look at me, I can't even get through the fucking sentence.
It's okay, I got you.
I just was kind of brought back to a place where I remember everything about that relationship and how terrible it was and how traumatizing it was and how bad the things that happened to me really were, because I compartmentalized so well that I genuinely thought that it didn't affect me. And it's so funny to think as human beings that something that bad could happen to us and it wouldn't affect us. Mm-hmm. Like, how could you move on with your life or go forward?
Well, your brain, that's why you hear about personality disorders like DID that occur, which is dissociative identity disorder, where when you're a child and you're severely abused, your brain, to protect you, splits you into two different personalities, two different people, two different, like, essentially consciousnesses inside of you, so that there's a wall between certain memories so that you don't have to even know that those exist.
Like, you're so good at blocking it out that your body creates a whole nother persona.
Your brain does it without you even knowing. Like, you don't do it on purpose. Your brain, when you go through severely traumatic shit, will naturally on its own, to protect you, put up like a wall in between that part of your brain and the rest of your brain. And that's why when certain things that trigger that part of your brain to like light up, you remember things that you didn't even know happened.
That wall comes down almost. And like, that's such a good way to put it so that I can understand it, because for me, I always thought it was just like I genuinely didn't care. It didn't bother me. Mm-hmm. I wasn't hurt by these things. And after kind of reliving these emotions this weekend, I realized, holy shit, I haven't dealt with any of this pain, any of this trauma. I just pushed it aside and thought I was a strong person. Like, I genuinely just thought, fuck.
Which you literally are. You know, that has nothing to do with it at all. But I remember when you first texted me and told me what you had found out had happened. And my first thought was like, Because for me, it was triggering as your friend who remembered you going through this situation. I couldn't imagine what type of memories and feelings that had surfaced for you.
It's been so weird for me. Like, I feel completely wrapped up in it again. Like, I find myself digging for old photos, trying to find any semblance of proof of what he did to me. Like, my face all fucked up or the text messages. Just, like, the chain of proof of abuse, that's it's gone. It's long gone. But I was, like, trying to get into my old iOS, trying to get into my old Snapchat. Like, I haven't had Snapchat since then. And I was so confused. I'm like, why am I so involved in this? Like, it's happening to me again right now. Like, I wanted to press charges. Like, I'm way past my statute of limitations for pressing charges.
Yeah.
And I was crying, which, like, I'm not a big crier, you know. I felt so unsafe this week. My head's been on a swivel. I, like, want to go get my CCW. Like, all of these big dramatic feelings are coming up for me. And I'm glad that we have the podcast to talk about this on, because I think it's a really good opportunity to talk about trauma and how much it actually affects us and how we can genuinely heal from it and feel it so that it doesn't affect us moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. And especially with things that are like life altering traumas and things that we think we've moved past, because with you especially, you are so strong and you are able to, you know, put on a strong face and genuinely move through life like things don't affect you. But something that I've always told you would end up happening is, like, because this is just how life works, is if you don't deal with something or work through it or think about it or talk about it, that trauma will stay inside of you because it has nowhere else to go. You know, even if you don't know it's there, it'll start to manifest itself in other ways. Or, you know, in your situation, if something comes and triggers you, that's where triggers in like relationships happen. You know, if your partner does something and then you get triggered and you don't really know why you're feeling triggered or why you feel unsafe or why you feel a certain way, it's because you have trauma that you haven't dealt with.
Stored. Yeah.
Stored somewhere in your mind, in your heart, in your soul. And the only way, unfortunately, to move past those traumas and those blockages within yourself to fully heal is to face them head on. And I know that for me personally, that's why I have not wanted to go to therapy, because I just know, especially as being such a self-aware person, I feel like I've already dealt with it. Although I see in every situation that has emotions involved for me, whether it's romantic relationships, family relationship, friendship, anything where I feel unsafe or like I get triggered, and I think I've healed from these things because I'm so self-aware and I know that these things have happened and I've thought about it, I've analyzed it 100 million times, how much more could I possibly heal from it? Then I get triggered and I know that these things are triggering me because there's still something inside of me that has not been unlocked, has there's not been trauma. Released, yeah. Has not been let go of, that I'm holding on to. And I know that a good way to deal with that is to go to therapy. But then I think, like, do I really want to go through
deal with it? Yeah, that, like go have all that shit brought up again. That was my, I fought therapy for the longest time because I'm like, I put all that shit away for a reason.
Yeah,
I don't want it out. But you're absolutely right, it manifests in multiple other ways, which for me was over drinking, lack of depth in relationships, the inability to keep a long healthy relationship, like hyper independence.
Funny, I was the opposite. I'm like, lots of drinking, staying out, not wanting to face reality was one way that it manifested. Another way was like severe depression and not feeling good about myself. And another way was like extreme attachment issues in relationships, anxiously attached, avoidantly attached, like never feeling secure in relationships, specifically with friends, family, anyone.
Which created like unnecessary and anxious attachments with people who maybe didn't necessarily that didn't deserve even, that.
That or, literally meant nothing to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it was just that trigger that got triggered.
Well, and I think that's the thing about trauma is I can speak to this, you know, from a really personal place because I really like to go around trauma, over it, under it, in a different universe than it. But I never like to go through it, mm-hmm. right? Because you have to feel something when you go through trauma. And something I learned when I finally went to therapy, I finally was able to get myself to go, thanks to some really good friends of mine, actually, who kind of sponsored me and pushed me to do it, that the only way to get past it is to go through it.
I heard a quote once that said, the only way out of this life is through.
Wow, that's deep.
And I love it though, because it's true, because we try to avoid things. We try to go around things. We try to sugarcoat shit. We try to make the cushioniest life for ourselves. But at the end of the day, the only way to get through hard shit is to go right through the hard shit.
Yeah.
Is to feel the hard feelings. Because genuinely, that is how you heal. Like, I know the amount of days I've spent trying to avoid feeling things, which is why we drink, which is why we party, which is why we, you know, you use substances.
Anything to change your state of mind.
To numb that, or men or women or people, social gatherings, because you don't want to be alone, because you don't want to have to face what you're really feeling, because it's so hard. And like, you know, it's like that helpless cry when you really cry when you're really going through it, where you don't feel better afterwards. You know, you just feel like it's like a hopeless cry.
Yeah.
But that, even if you go through a night where you're crying or you're upset or you're just like absolutely down fucking bad and you're like, what is the point of this? Like, I do not feel better. I feel like there's no outlet or there's no way out of this. Like, it's just a endless cycle because tomorrow I'm going to feel the same way. Like that wasn't helpful. It was helpful. And the longer
an inch closer
and the longer you avoid those nights and those moments with yourself, because those moments fucking suck.
It's terrible.
The longer you avoid it, the longer you're going to suffer. If you could take one piece of advice that I could give you right now is just go through it. Feel that pain.
Fucking sob. Ugly cry.
Sob, cry, scream, be miserable, be fucking heartbroken, be angry, be lonely, be scared, be like all of those
horrible
feelings that you're feeling, because they're not just going to escape or get up and walk away one day. The longer that you pretend to yourself that you're okay and push away all of these emotions that you're feeling, all you're doing is telling yourself that you are not a safe space for yourself. And if you're not a safe space for yourself, then who is?
Because nobody.
At the end of the day, you wake up with yourself every day. You go to sleep with yourself every day. You're the only person that is with you 100% of the time.
The only person that you like really have.
Yeah.
Like, of course you have the people in your life, but you're going to be with yourself forever.
Like, yeah. Sorry, what if they're all gone one day?
Yeah.
You have you and you need to be able to rely on you. So one way to do that is to trust yourself to be there for you when you need you. And well, I know that sounds fucking silly because it's like, well, of course I'm going to be there. But it's like, that means allowing yourself to feel things in the space of your own energy, even when it's scary, because you're teaching yourself that it's going to be okay because you have you and you're there for you and you're healing because you're allowing yourself to heal with no judgment and you're embracing the fear.
And showing up for yourself and creating solutions for yourself. Like instead of just wallowing in your victim mindset or your self-pity, creating solutions, doing things that you know are going to make you feel better, even if they're really fucking hard.
Yeah.
Because I think that's something, especially when you're in a really bad place, a really victimized place, a really traumatized place, it's really easy to just sit in the hole and do nothing.
Just like accept your reality.
Accept your fate, right? Yeah. But like you have so much control.
Your reality is yours to create.
100%.
And sure, we get stuck in situations and cycles where it feels impossible to break out. Trust me. We've both been there.
Yeah.
Like, we would not be sitting here talking about this right now if we both didn't have something to give you guys as word of advice from what we've personally experienced. Like, it's really hard when you're stuck and you feel stuck and you feel like you don't know which way to go, but there's always a way out. And the only way that you're ever going to get out is if you want to try to leave.
If you want to go through it.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest thing for me is like, I thought it was kind of a good thing that I was strong enough to not cry, strong enough to not feel things, strong enough to kind of just shake it off my shoulder. Like I thought that was a good quality, and it turned out that was just manifesting in other nasty ways in my life, because then I would get really drunk, and when you're really drunk and you're in a really bad place, those things come forward prominently in anger, emotion, unacceptable behavior. When you're very drunk and your inhibitions are not in control and you're in a bad mental place.
And you also don't care what happens to you.
You don't care. Yeah. You're going to see that. And that was me for a long time, you know, after some of these really traumatizing things happened to me back to back. I thought that I was handling it really well because I wasn't crying. I'm like, I didn't need to cry. I fucking hated crying. People always said, you'll feel better, just cry. To me, crying felt like the worst feeling. I can't even explain to you how much I hated it.
But that's what I was just saying. Like those cries where you feel like you're crying. And normally when you cry, you do feel better because it releases dopamine in your brain. And like your tears are, there's like a chemical process that happens inside of you when you cry that's supposed to be a release for your brain because you're feeling such intense emotions that cry is a release. And that's why you generally feel better after you cry.
Yeah.
When you're in a situation where the crying only makes you feel worse, only makes you feel more hopeless because it doesn't make you feel better. And it's almost like by the end of your cry, you just have to tell yourself to stop crying because there's no point. You're not feeling better. You're just going to sit there and cry for the rest of the night. Like you can't. At some point, you just have to cut it. But those cries, I mean, you don't have to cry, but like everyone cries. We're human. And like I said, it's a release.
Yeah.
It's a release. And when you finally allow yourself to have that release, it may not feel like it's accomplishing anything, but like it is, believe it or not, it is, because again, you're creating a safe space for yourself where you're allowed to cry, first of all. And secondly, you're allowing yourself to finally think about the thing that's bothering you, that's so pent up, and release it.
Release the emotion.
And especially when it's something that big of a deal or something that hurtful or that traumatizing, it's not going to go away with one cry. It's not going to go away in one night. It's not going to go away in one year.
Yeah, at all.
But it's never going to go away if you don't allow yourself the space and the grace and the love and the kindness, like, to heal. You know, I remember hearing once that if you're ever feeling really alone or really upset and you feel like you don't want to go to anyone or no one's there for you or whatever the case may be, like, give yourself a hug.
Yeah,
like,
be there for you. Show up for yourself.
No, like, literally hug yourself. Like, put your arms around yourself, like, rub your back, like, self-soothe. Like, if that's what you need to do, self-soothe. Makes me uncomfortable
just thinking about it.
I've done that. There's been a couple nights where, like, I literally, like, hold my arms around myself and, like, rock in place and cry and, like, and tell myself, like, I've got you.
I've got you.
I've got you.
Well, that's such a beautiful thing because, like, that's the purest form of strength that you can have. Like, being strong and pushing everything down, that's not real strength. That's fear. That's weakness, because that was me not showing courage, not having the courage to deal with my shit and thinking that it was strong to push it away. I didn't really believe in any of this until I went to therapy. And in my therapy, we really focused more on my situation with my mom because I had a really traumatizing relationship with my mother. And I never really focused on the domestic abuse that I went through, when it turns out that, you know, that was almost bigger. But I went to this session and I was pretty deep. Like, I was 6 months into this year long, very deep life coaching therapy. And we did almost like a hypnosis session where, and again, I did not believe in this shit. So just coming from me, this is like, it was crazy. I think this was life-changing for me to release trauma. I meditated really deeply, got into a really deep state of meditation where I almost felt out of body. And my therapist at the time was walking me through what he considered to be my core wounding, which is basically the most traumatizing or the worst thing that ever happened to you. And in my case, that was my mother committing suicide. So it was something that I, you know, had pushed away for so long because it was so terrible that I couldn't deal with it. And he walked me through step by step. I mean, I'm talking from the beginning to the end. And this deep state of meditation, he made me tell my own story. I felt like it was an out-of-body experience, me telling this story.
Like in third person.
Yeah. And
like
it wasn't
happening to you, like it didn't happen to you.
I was able to remember details that I didn't even know happened. I was able to talk about things that I had suppressed so deeply that I didn't even know were bothering me or even existed. And I just remember the pain that I felt, the pain that was building as I was telling the story and getting deeper into, you know, some of the worst parts and getting closer to, you know, the end of her life. And I just felt this pain build. It started to build in my shoulders and then my neck and my head. And the pain was fucking excruciating. Like, it wasn't a headache, or I could feel the trauma moving from my stomach and my heart moving up to the top of my head. And at the end of this story, there's tears streaming down my face, but I'm not crying. I'm telling this story. My whole body is shaking, vibrating. My head feels like it's gonna pop. And then I get to the end of my story and I realize that I can't take blame for this anymore. And I accept that there's nothing I could do to change it. And I accept that it hurt and that I wasn't okay and that it fucking sucked. And that trauma, I just felt it release out of the top of my head. And that's the first time I'd ever talked about my mom, the first time I'd ever told her story, the first time I'd ever felt any feelings around it, because the whole time I was so busy taking care of everyone else and suppressing that I never thought that it even really bothered me. And of course it did. It was the worst thing that ever happened to me. And that repressed trauma came up, and it was crazy to realize that trauma is stored in your body and it actually hurts you. I mean, that was sitting in my body and rotting. And when it finally came out, I felt like I had lost 100 pounds. A weight was lifted off my shoulders. I found a new strength. And now I'm able to think about my mom and talk about my mom and cry about my mom without feeling weak. And I'm able to get through it.
Well, first of all, I still think that, like, as being your friend for so long and watching you go through all of that and knowing you, like, at the peak of all of that, becoming, like, I think that's when we became the closest.
Absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
At the peak of your really abusive relationship ending, which ended at the same time as your mother passing.
Yeah. Right around the same time.
Which was what triggered you to leave.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is why I believe, you know, everything does happen for a reason, as twisted and as fucked up as life is. And how, like, it doesn't make any sense. And, like, you know, there's always a silver lining, because I think that he would have killed you, if I'm being blunt.
Probably.
And I remember watching you go through the motions and, like, healing. And, like, obviously I'd never been through anything nearly as traumatizing as the things that you had been through. And I was the depressed friend. Like, I was like, why am I so fucking weak when I'm around this woman who's so strong and, like, has been through so much more than me? And I remember, like, thinking, you need to go to therapy to deal with this, because you were so disconnected from your spiritual self, from any emotion, from anything, which I admired, being someone that's very emotional and, like, can't fucking tie her shoe without crying sometimes, you know, like I really, like, looked up to you for strength when I needed you. And I feel like we were a good balance in that way. And I do think that's why we were put in each other's lives during that time. But when I finally heard you were going to therapy, I was just, like, so happy for you in, like, the weirdest way, because I know, as someone that's really close to you, like, as strong as you are, that, and just, I guess, in a general human being, like, from human to human, like, no one should have to live with that type of weight on their shoulder and trauma and pain and stuff. And, like, I knew that it was just sitting inside of you, and you did a really good job. Like, round of applause.
Thank you.
Clap, clap, clap. But no one can live like that for too long without it really truly affecting them.
It would have eaten me alive if I never dealt with it.
Yeah. And just another side note, like the story about when you were in your life coaching therapist session is fucking crazy.
It's honestly was, it blows me away that this is even possible because I didn't think like,
well, they say trauma is stored in your body.
Yeah. And you could, I could feel it. And this wasn't like a normal therapy session. It was like, you know, this is a person who deals with deep trauma and core wounding and like how to heal from those specific things. I mean, I can't even explain to you how physical it was. It was not mental, really.
Well, this is just kind of a side note, but like I do know kind of what you're talking about because I used to have dreams where like I would wake up, my body, I would be like awake, but I'd be sleeping. Like I always thought I would was about to start lucid dreaming, but my body would start trembling, like vibrating. Like I literally felt like I was vibrating and my head felt like it was going to explode. And I just remember like trying to wake myself up, but it almost felt like I was asleep, my eyes were closed, but I was consciously aware that this was happening. And I was like trying to wake myself up because it was freaking me out, but I would get stuck in this like paralysis, but my eyes would be closed. I wasn't dreaming. Everything was black. You know, like I couldn't see anything. All I was thinking was like, God, this is fucking terrifying.
What is happening to me?
Yeah. I'm vibrating, like straight up feel like I'm being shaken. And I just remember my head would feel like it was going to explode. And then all of a sudden I'd wake up gasping for air. And it was during one of the most traumatic periods of my life. And I just remember feeling like it was like this pent up energy just like stuck inside of me trying to get out. And that's what it always felt like. And I always remember being like, what the fuck is that? And that makes me wonder if it's like the trauma.
Absolutely. That's what it is. It's your body with stored emotions and stored trauma trying to find a release for it. Because when you're awake, you have the compartmentalization skills to put it away. But when you're sleeping, especially like the dreams that I would have after this, all of this shit that kind of just started coming to the surface. And this was after like 5 or so years of suppression. It kind of blew me away that all that shit was just sitting in there that whole time. And for me, it was like a lot of guilt too. Like I was finally able to let go of the guilt that I felt because my mom was the coolest lady, like such an amazing, beautiful, wonderful person. And I'm sure there are a lot of people that are like, how could they do that? That's so selfish. And I had those same thoughts, but it really helped me understand it and come to peace with it, which is, I think that's the biggest thing about trauma is like, if you don't deal with it, you can never have peace with it.
Have peace with it. And yeah, like whatever way you look at it, like I think something that you struggle with pertaining specifically to trauma is like the guilt that comes along.
Yeah,
with it.
I feel like it's all my fault.
Whether it's with your mother or with the relationship that we speak of, because I think the number one thing that I've heard you voice, obviously, I think, you know, you've been having flashbacks to when you were in that really, really scary place of your life with this person. But I think the main thing that I keep hearing you talk about is how guilty you feel for not pressing charges to put this man away so that he couldn't do it to someone else.
Absolutely. It's my biggest regret, like in the entire world.
But like, I think that's where you have to come to peace with it because you did what you needed to do to survive. You know, you had to leave to survive because you were in this endless cycle of horror and you cannot blame yourself for what he's doing to someone else.
Well, and I think that's the thing that I really want women, especially women who are in situations like this, to understand is that there's nothing wrong with you. It's not your fault. You don't deserve it. You have Stockholm syndrome. Like a lot of people don't realize that Stockholm syndrome is not just something you can whiff away. People are like, why didn't you leave? Why didn't you press charges? Why didn't you do this or that? You are chemically bonded, chemically binded to this person and the way that they've been manipulating you, the way that they have been changing the way that you think, the way that you look.
The way that they beat you down to feel like you are nothing to nobody and never will be unless they're the ones loving you because no one else will love you.
Well, like, and they cut you off from everybody else, right? They take away your friends.
Isolate you.
They take away your family. They control every aspect, your social media, your job, until you are literally a fucking shell of a person. You're a puppet. They've got their hand up your ass and you're a fucking puppet. And you're so, you don't even realize that you're living in such a constant state of fear and you're in fight or flight all the time. And when you finally get an opportunity to do something about it, you shut down. You don't have the mental capacity when you're in a situation like that to make decisions like pressing charges or leaving, even if you're getting beat.
Especially because like, you're being beat. You still love the person. That's all that you have in that moment, especially when they are that abusive and that manipulative and they have spent years and years and years grooming you into being this submissive like puppet that they've created. You're not going to press charges on them in that moment. You're not going to leave. No. You're not going to tell the truth. You're afraid, one, for your life, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Imagine what telling the truth does if no one believes you. And not to mention just the psychological effect that the abuse has on a person, especially years and years and years in the making, is so detrimental to the psyche and just this, in the sense of like how you think. You're not thinking right.
You're not
you. You're not you. I was just going to say that.
It takes so long to rebuild yourself after that too. Like it's been 7 years and I'm rebuilt for sure, but I definitely didn't think these feelings still existed inside of me.
I mean, fuck, it takes a long time to rebuild after any relationship.
Let alone spend so much time
with anyone. You build a life with them. You become someone else, whether you think so or not. That's why being single is so important after a relationship, because you have to find yourself again. I can't imagine how hard it is for someone that's been emotionally, physically, mentally, spiritually abused and beaten down for so long, for years and years and years and years, especially when you're a young girl when it starts.
Yeah, well, and that's how it always starts is, you know, guys like that love getting young, naive girls who are really easily manipulated, because men like that are very charismatic, very manipulative. They're really good at making you think that they're someone they're not. And even when they show you the bad person, they're really good at making you believe that that's okay or that's, you know, apologizing. Your fault. And,
yeah.
I mean, honestly, in my situation, it was always me who ended up apologizing, which was so crazy. Like I would get hit and I would apologize. He had me so twisted. And I think the thing that bothers me the most in this situation, especially now that I'm out of it and I have such a wonderful life, a truly wonderful, beautiful, amazing partner, friends, career, home, my life is everything I ever could have imagined. Just knowing that he gets to walk the streets free and portray himself to be this person on social media who's so positive and have other girlfriends who I know he's abusive with as well, and is going to continue that cycle forever until he ends up doing something really terrible and getting put away. Because the problem is, you won't get put away unless someone wants to press charges. And as a woman, you don't want to press charges because you're fucking terrified.
He's too manipulative. Like by the time anyone would have a reason to press charges on him, they are so wrapped around his finger and manipulated and stuck in this like vicious cycle that he creates that they're not themselves. They're, like you said, a shell of the person that they once were, who maybe had like half of a brain cell to not allow that behavior.
But no.
It's not like it's just like the first day you meet them, they just start beating the shit out of you.
Right.
Just
you like, oh, it's you would never stay with them at that point. Yeah. And I think that was my biggest thing was like, obviously I was so isolated and I was so young at that point. And even my own family was like, they were just disgusted with me. Everyone was disgusted with me for allowing myself to be treated this way. But like, that didn't help. All that did was make me reclude more into him and like shut down more. And I think my advice for anyone who's either going through this or knows someone who's going through this is that you have to be so fucking overwhelmingly supportive. You have to be there. I mean, even if your friend comes to you and tells you the worst shit and goes back to him the next day, you have to be there for them.
You can never leave your friend behind like that.
Not in that moment.
Especially if you're afraid for their safety, like you're a bad friend. And I'll say this, like with Madison and I, when I was in a really toxic relationship, it hadn't gotten abusive, like physically. But she would hear the same fucking song and dance from me every single time we would fight, which was literally daily. And she never for a second stopped being my friend or wasn't there for me or didn't listen to me. And like,
it's always open arms.
And I don't know if I would have ever been able to get through that relationship if I didn't have Madison.
Because that's the thing, is it's being repetitively built up that is going to end up saving your life. Because for me to finally leave, it took me realizing that there was a life on the other side. Like I was not stuck in this life forever, unless I wanted to be. It was my choice. I got to live. I got to choose. And the only way I was able to leave was by fucking leaving the state. Because people like that, they will do anything they can to rope you back in, to suck you back in, threaten suicide, threaten killing you. Everything that you could possibly imagine someone like that doing, they're gonna do to try and pull you back. When they start to see you actually pulling away, because that's when they panic. They lose control, they lose the manipulation rope, and they're gonna do anything they can. So I put all my shit in my car and I fucking left. Best decision I ever made. And I guess my point to this all is that if you're going through something like this, there is so much hope. There is a life on the other side. There is so much beauty that you can create for yourself. You just have to be strong enough to leave. And to do that, you have to lean on people. You have to lean on your friends and lean on your family. And if you're completely fucking alone in this world, you have to lean on yourself. Mm-hmm. Because they are never going to stop hurting you. They are never going to treat you right. They are never going to change. And if you don't do something about it, especially if they're physical with the police, they're going to do it to the next person too. You have to take control. Even if that takes you, it took me years. It was the hardest thing that I ever did to leave. And kind of thinking about everything that happened with my mom and happened with that relationship and the timeline, you're absolutely right. You know, as much as everything that happened with my mom killed me and I wish I could change it every day, I don't know that I would have left in the time that I did without that happening, because I needed a catapult.
Yeah.
And that was what happened with my mom, was so traumatizing. And the person I was with at the time was so unsupportive and terrible to me that it was almost like I couldn't stay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And another point I wanted to make too, healing from trauma and getting through trauma, and something that's actually been really beautiful for me is I never used to think about my mom. I never used to talk about her because I had just suppressed all the memories, good and bad. And once I went through the trauma, I was kind of able to start to see signs of her, like, you know, a butterfly or, you know, whatever it may be, things that I always ignored mm-hmm. before because I didn't think that they were real or it didn't matter to me because I was so shut down.
I always used to ask you, like, do you ever ask to talk to her? Do you ever ask her for signs? Do you ever, you're like, no.
No, nothing. Because to me, I just shut it all off. And the worst thing about doing that is you lose the pain, but you also lose the beauty and the love and the joy. And that is such a shame to not have the memory of someone, to not have the love that they brought to you. And the fact that she raised me to be the person I am, I am her. I ignored all of that. And finding that again has been such a beautiful thing in my life. And we were camping this weekend, actually sitting around the campfire, and we're playing a little card game, and I pulled a card, and of course, like, no one else had gotten a card like this, and the card said, send your mom the 12th picture in your camera roll or finish your drink or whatever. So, like, of course we all laugh because, like, everyone knows, huh, I don't have a mom. I do have a mom, but she's not alive anymore. And so, like, one of the girls was like, well, what is the 12th picture in your camera roll? Like, I'm super curious. And so I scrolled. I was like, all the way back. I've had my phone for like 7 years. The 12th picture in my camera roll is a picture of my mom's urn. Okay. And a picture of her face next to it.
Shut the fuck up.
This is like forever ago. I don't have any pictures of the urn or of her. Or like I looked at it. And I was like, there's no way it's the 12th. The first pictures in my camera roll, the 12th picture, her urn and her face. So it was just like she was there saying
so
hi.
Cool.
Next round comes around. I pull a card and it says, text your mom and tell her how much you love her. I cannot make this shit up. No one else pulled the card about their fucking mom. It was like she was telling me she was there. And like,
I'm sure she's been telling you for years.
But it took me dealing with the trauma
to be a perceptive and
to
open.
To recognize
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
And like these are signs you can't ignore, right?
Yeah.
And I just looked up.
See,
and
but
I was
doesn't
like,
that make you feel so good to know that she's actually not gone?
It made me feel amazing.
Yeah.
Like before that would have made me mad. That
yeah.
would have pissed me off. That would have made me or indifferent.
Yeah.
Or I probably would have just chugged
like, what
my
is
drink.
This sick joke
yeah,
that you're playing
instead
on
of
me.
Like looking at my 12th, I would have just been like, ah, chug my drink, she's dead, whatever. Because I was so indifferent and angry.
And closed off.
Yep. And instead I looked up and I was like, I love you, mom.
Yeah.
Like, I love you.
Like, cheers, bitch.
Yeah, no, literally. And it was yeah. just such a like a full circle moment for me to realize that as fucking terrible as it was dealing with the trauma, I wouldn't change it for the world. And now this shit coming back up, as much as I want to ignore it, I'm going to deal with it. I'm going to go through it because I know that that's the only way I'm going to be able to heal from it.
Well, I'm really proud of you.
Thank you.
Because I know that this has been just like the worst journey. This healing process isn't like healing's never easy, but you got the plethora, didn't you? And you haven't backed down to it. So I'm proud of you.
I mean, you've done some really incredible things with your healing as well. And obviously we have a really different way of going about that, but it's not like you've had an easy ride. And I think back to what you said about how your kind of negative emotions come up in relationships. I think for you, because that's where you've had the most trauma and that's where you find the biggest level of like, that's where you have the biggest level of like unsafe feelings.
Yeah.
Because you don't feel safe in relationships.
Yeah, but it's funny because I wonder if that stems from like relationships with my parents growing up.
Things that you watch. And when I say your biggest issue with relationships, not just your own,
yeah,
but those around you as well. You know, never watching, you know, like a happy, safe, successful marriage, you know, watching a separation of two people, being right in the middle of that,
mm-hmm.
being pulled to both sides,
yeah.
and then finally being old enough to have men in your life and watching them do you fucking dirty too.
For me, it was like, I think the main point of that trauma as, because, you know, lots of people go through divorce and like lots of people watch their parents fight, not like each other and all of that. Like that's fairly common. Not like saying it's not traumatic, because it definitely was. But I think the part of it that was traumatic for me was then not having a good relationship with either of them, like for the next 10 years of my life, essentially.
Yeah.
Because I didn't. And so I was all completely alone. And I think that for me, whenever I entered into my first romantic relationship, that was the first like real love that I had felt from someone in such a long time.
And you just poured your whole fucking soul into it.
I just was like, I felt so safe there for the
yeah.
first time in years. Like I didn't have to be on defense, or I didn't have to wonder like if they loved me, or like if they were, you know, just, I just knew that that was a safe place. And I think that, you know, I really appreciated it at the time because I really needed it. And then like in the future when that ended, ended, and then there was traumas from losing that, and then stem, like, again, traumas from my childhood because of my relationships with my parents, whatever the case may be, that, yeah, now when I do get into relationships, I notice a lot of wounds get triggered very easily. And sometimes I wonder, like, why is this triggering me? Like, I know logistically in my mind that, like, before the trigger happens, before I'm in the relationship, I can look at a situation and be like, I know so much about this now, like, that won't bother me.
I can deal with this.
I can deal with this. But then I get into a relationship, and recently I was talking to someone, and this is just an example, but I noticed that for me, whenever I notice someone's mood change, or their tone of voice changes, or they are just more quiet than usual, or their text is just like one letter off than it normally is, they send me the hey with one Y instead of two, like, I'm immediately triggered. And I'm like, are you okay? What's wrong? And then I feel annoying because I'm like,
what? And you're like, what did I do?
What did I do? What, are you mad at me? Do you not love me anymore? Do you not like me? Am I annoying you? Like, I just go through, and it's crazy what happens in my mind. And I've been trying to just, like, take a second and feel that feeling and, like, just, like, sit with it instead of letting myself panic and react to it, because I'm trying to figure out where it comes from and why I feel that way, because nothing will happen. Nothing will change. And ironically enough, after this happened the other day, a video popped up on my feed, and it was about something called emotional monitoring. And basically what emotional monitoring is when you are super perceptive to, like, the slightest change in your partner's mood or tone or just their aura or any way that they are acting around you, and you immediately start to worry that it's something you did. And I actually learned that this stems from growing up in an environment that was unstable or neglectful. And I remember it just struck a chord with me, because I feel like that is me in relationships. I notice the smallest shift, and it could be the most irrelevant thing. Like, maybe they are just tired, or maybe they just had a bad day at work. But for me, it triggers me, because then I feel like all of a sudden they don't like me anymore. Just within 10 minutes, they all of a sudden don't like me anymore. It doesn't make any sense. And I'm looking for reassurance in that moment, but I also don't want to be annoying. Like, I just want them to reassure me, but it's not their fault if they don't, because they might not know that I'm feeling triggered. And obviously that's where communication comes in, but sometimes it just feels really silly. And in the video that I saw, it was talking about how if you do have a partner that's constantly asking you, like, are you okay? Is everything okay? As long as you're able to reassure them when they do ask those questions, that behavior will lessen over time, because they will start to feel safe and you're actually helping them heal.
And reassuring them when they're insecure, because that's where that really comes from, is a place of insecurity. Growing up in an unstable environment, especially like as a child of divorce and being in the middle of, you know, kind of a toxic environment, always needing assurance that it's not your fault. Having a partner who can constantly reassure you is going to put you into a safe mindset where you don't feel like you have to ask that all the time.
And I can imagine that it's probably annoying to be with someone that needs, like, constant reassurance. But unfortunately,
people are traumatized.
People be traumatized. Like, I like, that's what I'm saying, is like, I don't feel traumatized until I'm in a relationship and I feel triggered.
And that's, things come up. Yeah.
And, you know, I should probably go to therapy for it, but sometimes it just doesn't feel like it's a big deal until I'm in the moment being traumatized from it. Because I can sit here and talk to you about it all day long and be like, this makes sense, this is why it's happening. But when you're actually in the moment, when you're actually feeling those triggering feelings,
when those neural pathways are fired up and you're actually,
and you're actually in the moment of actually experiencing it, it's really hard to talk yourself off the ledge. And I feel like I've gotten better at kind of just, like, trying to ground myself and tell myself that it's not real. It's, you know, everything is fine. This is just my trigger and it's going to be okay. But it is really difficult at times.
But I think it's your partner's responsibility, in a sense, to reassure you and to take care of you in that sense. Because if someone's choosing to be your partner and choosing to be there for you, they're choosing to be there for the good and the bad. The good, the bad, and the ugly.
I absolutely agree with you. And I think that that's true, but you also have to be able to communicate that to them. So, because, like, they can't read your mind. And that's absolutely where I struggle, because, you know, I feel like these triggering emotions happen so early on for me in a relationship that it's like at a certain point in the relationship, it just doesn't really, I feel like it's too soon.
It doesn't make sense for you to put that on them.
Yeah. To be able to be like, hey, I'm feeling triggered. Can you tell me that you love me? Cause, like, we've only been talking for a month.
And,
like,
you don't even love them.
I don't even love you. But, like, it feels like I need to hear in that moment to feel safe and secure, which is obviously, like, a little bit exaggerated, but you know what I mean? Like, I'm not gonna be talking to someone and be like, hey, I'm feeling triggered.
Just want to let you know. They're like, what? You're like on your first date.
They never talk to me again.
Well, and I think that's the difference between having the emotional intelligence to know when it is your partner's responsibility and when it's your responsibility. And also, if you are in a long-term relationship and your partner is taking responsibility for that and working on you help heal your triggers and giving you that reassurance, also having the emotional intelligence to get better and to heal from
it. To not just like rely on their reassurance constantly.
Not let it be a repetitive habit.
Well, and I do believe that like, even if you are like in the talking stages with somebody and like you do feel that something has come up, I think it's okay to voice that to them, because honestly, that's going to weed out the people that don't really give a shit anyways. Honestly,
and aren't meant for you.
Do it in the right way. Don't make yourself sound like a needy, fucking crazy bitch. Like a nut job. You know, to anyone that doesn't know you that well, that might come across a little too strong maybe at first. But I also think that the key to any relationship ever, or the key to anything in life, is communication.
I knew she was going to say that.
But it's just true. So I think if you're feeling any type of way, the best thing that you can do is communicate that to somebody. And that's sometimes hard to do for me because I'm so emotionally involved with myself that sometimes that's where you and I are very different. You're very logical. So you're able to articulate what an emotion is, whereas I have to process it for a couple of days and then I can talk about it. And that's why sometimes when I get upset about things or mad or literally anything, I'm feeling all of these feelings, but I can't articulate it, and I'm acting out of emotion, and then I'll think about it for a couple days, and then I'll come back and be like, this is why I felt this way, this is why I was acting this way, this is what triggered me, blah 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 blah.
And you're able to like calm down and really talk through
and
it,
really analyze,
instead of like your impulsive reaction, which was kind of your first emotional reaction.
And I'm working on doing that, but it is really hard as someone who's very emotional. Like I'm a very emotionally driven person, and it's not a bad thing, but it definitely does make like logic go out the window sometimes. Not like I'm saying I'm crazy, but I definitely sometimes I don't even understand why I'm upset. And so when someone's like, why are you so upset? I don't know.
Well, and basically,
I just know I'm upset.
You know now that you need a man who has the emotional maturity, the emotional intelligence, and the patience to deal with that, because you're an emotional person. That's who you are. Does that give you an excuse to act, you know, aggressively, impulsively, and irrationally?
No.
But are you an emotional person?
But I will say, like, that is a good point that you just made, because the more that I do date and the more that I do talk to like different types of people when I'm in different types of relationships, it's experience. I do know what I need and what I want, whereas like a couple years ago, I maybe didn't. So I wasn't picking the right people or looking for the right things in people. And so as I date now, I am able to recognize certain things in people that fit well with me and certain things that don't. And also going through that, being an emotional person, when you are with the right person, like I don't feel as reactive or triggered.
You're not as emotional because you don't need to be.
I'm not as emotional because I'm not with someone that triggers me. And when they do trigger me, because it's someone that has those qualities, I should be able to communicate that to them and have them understand.
And that's a safe place.
Yeah.
And that was exactly the same thing for me when I was with the partner who made me feel safe. I felt like I didn't have to shut down, because that's what I did with men all the time. I shut down. I shut them out. I was unemotional. I was cold. I was a bitch, whatever you want to call it. And that's why the relationships never worked, because I never allowed them in. When you're with someone who makes you feel safe, you're not so triggered. The walls don't go up.
Yeah.
And that's like how you know you're with a person that's at least maybe not who you're supposed to be with, but on the right track.
I feel like I create such a safe place for every person that I ever talk to, because that's something that I desperately crave in relationships.
Because it matters to you.
And if you really pay attention to what you offer people in relationships and what is a priority that you make to make them happy, like what do you do for your man or your woman that makes you feel like you're treating them the best that they could be treated, because those are the qualities that you should be looking for in another person, because those are obviously the things that you find the most important. And it's taken me honestly up until last month of my life to really realize that, but it's so true. It's like, if you really value being a good communicator, so when you're with someone, you communicate really well to them, then you need someone that communicates with you. Like, you might just think, oh, this is just how I am as a partner. No, those are the things that you do in relationships, because those are the things that you want.
You treat someone how you want to be treated.
That's what they say about love languages. It's like, you generally want the love language that you give. Yeah.
And this ties back in with our last podcast, that like, these are the conversations you have to be having with people, not even just partners, friends, family members. If people are not serving you, making you feel better, making you feel good, not supporting you, I'm not saying you have to like fucking cold turkey cut everyone out of your life, but you don't need to be close with everybody.
Yeah.
You don't need to be super tight with people who don't make you feel good or don't make you feel safe.
Or being self-aware enough to just be able to recognize that early on in a relationship, if you're with somebody and they're not meeting your needs, even if it's something small, even if they meet all of these really amazing needs that you've been searching for, but they're lacking in certain areas, like you don't have to settle.
No, absolutely. There's other people like that out there. I completely agree. And I think that's why we're with each other, because
Yeah, Madison's did, the true love of my life.
We done did found each other.
We done did found each other. Do you think your mom like sent us to each other?
I'm sure she did. My mom's crazy ass wanted your crazy ass with my crazy ass. She wanted a whole lot of crazy.
I think she helped us both out.
And I mean, like,
because I truly feel like our friendship was divinely guided. I know that sounds crazy, but like, I don't know, like, because we had known each other for a really long time, but like, I don't know what I would do without you, like, genuinely. And I feel like the phase of my life where you became the most prominent person in my life was like probably the darkest time of my life and probably the darkest time of your life.
Absolutely.
And we just like, we clicked. And we've been inseparable literally ever since.
I'm not kidding. I think we were in Rosarito, which was like the trip that we really bonded on. Like, yeah. I think that was like a month after my mom died and I left my relationship. And like,
and I was going through my breakup and
that sounds insensitive.
Going through the worst depression of my life.
Totally. Yeah. And like, that sounds insensitive of me because they're like, why are you in Rosarito? But like, that's how I coped. I partied. Mm-hmm. And we had a plan. A bunch of us, nobody else showed up.
Yep.
Should we have showed up? No, but no. Did we?
We did.
And now look, we're sitting on this fucking couch doing bad therapy podcasts.
Making history.
And can you believe that this podcast started with Shrek? because I told you it was going to take a dark turn.
We had to start it out a little light, you know, and you guys with some fucking
started on a light pain. Note, turned to trauma.
Well, actually, we started with, I've been a nasty girl.
I've been a nasty girl. I'm nasty girl. Bombastic.
It's only the beginning of our pods and the end of our pods are always just so ridiculous. Like last pods, you had your dogs out.
The dogs were out. Not tonight, man. They're cold. Not tonight. They're cold.
It is cold in here, but I'm wearing like 8 layers.
It's funny. My boyfriend doesn't watch like the YouTube version of the pod. Like he'll listen to it on his whatever.
Yeah.
On his.
So he just heard.
And well, and it was funny, but he watched it because I had it on and he was like, I like your little blanket. And because he didn't realize this is how I sit on the pod.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he saw me take my dogs out and he was like, what the fuck? Is this what you guys do? I was like, yeah.
He should not sound so surprised. Like he knows us pretty fucking well.
I think our next trucker had his dogs out on the pod.
Yeah, with like two toes. No, 10 toes, 2 feet.
Well, cheers to episode 26. Thanks for tuning in for the trauma dump.
Yeah. Thanks for trauma dumping with us.
Just know that there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
There's always a silver lining and...
Shrek.
And Shrek and go be a nasty gal. It's fantastic.
Bombastic.